The state of Wisconsin is doing something to preserve and store our Wisconsin history. I mean, we've already done quite a bit, but there's more that needs to be done. And Ann Koski is our guest today to talk with us about it. She's director of the Wisconsin Historical Museum. It's located on Madison's Capitol Square. If you think about it, well, I'll tell you what, let me introduce her to you right now. Ann, thank you for coming by and being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, glad to do so.
And as we talk with her about preserving and storing our history in Wisconsin, I hope you'll join in. The number to call with your questions is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And if the big picture here, the Wisconsin State Historical Society, I think it even predates statehood, does it not?
Yes, it does, by 2 years. We were actually founded in 1846, and of course the state was 1848.
Yeah, and how did it happen to come into existence before a statehood?
Well, of course, we were a territory at that time,
yeah.
And there were a group of citizens, including Morgan L. Martin and Daniel Whitney and others, who felt that this was going to be a very, very important state in the Union, and its history needed to be preserved. So they banded together and formed the Wisconsin Historical Society.
And you direct the Wisconsin Historical Museum.
Correct.
And that is one of several divisions of the Historical Society, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. We have five divisions. So the museum is one. We have our historic sites, and you know there are 10 of them scattered across the state. Our Library Archives Division is the third, and you may not know this, but we have the largest North American history library, only next to the Library of Congress.
Wow.
So it is
I did not know that.
Yes, it is a huge resource, not just for the university and the state of Wisconsin, but in fact, internationally as well.
And what is housed in the Wisconsin Historical Museum, your museum?
Well, we cover everything from pre-contact periods, so from Paleo-Indian times, 10,000 years ago, all the way up to the present. And we deal specifically with two- and three-dimensional objects. The Library Archives has such things, obviously, as books, manuscripts, maps, that sort of thing. But if you have, say, textiles or furniture or projectile points, that's us.
That's you. Okay. And, you know, the state has kind of realized that it's probably not a good idea to have million-dollar collections stored in the basement of the Historical Society.
Oh, boy. The collections are not open to the public, but when we do take tours down there of folks, they're always amazed, especially when we point out some of the pipes going overhead. And we have one room, room 61, that houses about 45% of our historical collections, and it has two valves on it that if either one of those valves fails, that room is filled with water in about 10 minutes. So it is, yes, it's like that Damocles sword.
Oh, my goodness. So we have a project then to kind of rectify that.
Yes, it's actually something we've been working on for years and years to put together a preservation storage facility that will house our objects, all of our objects from the museum collections. It will house about half of our library archives holdings, and it will house collections from the Wisconsin Veterans Museum. So it's going to be a very, very important building for the state of Wisconsin.
Well, we'll get to some more in-depth on that, but Michael in Mequon is online with a question or comment. Michael, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
And thanks for the opportunity. My dad was in the Pacific and had his camera with him, and we have a large collection of the negatives of photos that he took at Iwo Jima during the battle and Okinawa and on the ship. And I'm wondering if you have resources to receive donations for safekeeping for these kinds of materials. And other people may have other interests family materials that they've received also.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. We do accept items. In fact, both us and the Library and Archives, and for photos, that's in our Library Archive Division. We do collect. I just picked up last, I shouldn't say picked up, but actually we did, a pink kitchen from the 1950s. So you can see how eclectic we can go. But photographs are a very important part of our state's history. And both the Wisconsin Historical Society collects them, and also the Wisconsin Veterans Museum collects military photographs.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And you can join in, too, at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Where's the new preservation PSF, Preservation Storage Facility? Where is that going to be located?
It's out. It's going to be off of Troy Drive near the community gardens and the mental health center there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easily accessible in terms of folks coming out there who need to research collections or pick up objects, or even our own staff, as well as on a bus line, so that our work study and interns and others will be able to easily reach us.
And what I assume is it's more than just, it's not a warehouse. Well, it's kind of a warehouse in a way, but it's more than that, too.
Much more than that, at least for the museum. Since our entire collection will be there, and we have about 500,000 objects, our curatorial staff will go with their objects. So we will have offices there, as will the Veterans Museum collections folks and the library archives. We will have areas for researchers. So if, say, you are coming to look at gowns from the 1860s, we would have a place to put them out for you, the researcher, to come and take a look at them and research them and take photographs and whatever. There's also going to be a conservation lab for three-dimensional objects, a classroom, since we do work with the university and teach classes, as well as just give programs on our own, especially in things like genealogy or care of objects or whatever. So it's much more than just a warehouse.
And, you know, just moving these things, you know, I'm thinking you mentioned gowns, and I was thinking cloth, and, man, it's got to be difficult to preserve something like that over time.
Yes, and interestingly enough, because of the types of objects we have to worry about the environment that they're in. And they can require different ones. So plastics items require a different environment than textiles, than furniture, and so forth. So part of our planning for this was actually laying out the types of collections that we had and determining the kinds of environmental conditions that they needed to be in. What would the humidity of the room need to be? What would the temperature need to be? What about lighting levels? What about security? And what about particulate matter in the air? So we've worked a long time to get even up to this stage where we know what this thing is going to look like.
I would think, and you mentioned security, and, you know, there have been problems over the years from time to time. There have been thefts and so forth. So this, I assume this is going to help mitigate against that.
Very much so. Right now, our collections are in 10 different rooms at the Historical Society. So each one has to be differently secured with card access and so on and so forth. Now we'll have them in one discrete unit that we can set up the proper security system for it.
Let's take a call from Tom in Superior next. Tom, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I know you're talking about storing World War II memorabilia and artifacts and the like, but we have a fantastic facility up here in Superior. It's the Richard I. Bong Heritage Museum. It was originally dedicated to Richard Bong and his exploits as the Ace of Aces in World War II in New Guinea, by the way.
Yeah.
But they now have expanded to be a to cover all of the wars that the United States was involved in. They do take, store, and display war memorabilia from all of the wars and honor many of the veterans who donate them. So I think your listeners ought to know that this is another facility that's available for storing and preserving and displaying all of those items.
Yeah. And what's the name of it again?
It's the Richard I. Bong Heritage Museum.
And, you know, Ann, you probably don't have any problem with that. In fact, you probably appreciate the fact that there are other places.
Oh, yes. And in fact, Wisconsin is so lucky in the number and quality of museums that exist across the state. And in fact, the Wisconsin Historical Society has over 370 affiliated local historical societies. They're in counties, they're in cities, they're in villages. They're just everywhere. And their purpose is to help preserve and tell the story using their collections of the history of their area or their town, their village, or whatever. And all of us work together to do that. So we're happy that that's the case.
Yeah. Tom, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I just thought you ought to know about that.
Yeah, that absolutely. I'm glad you brought it up. It's probably a website, too, for that as well. Well, our guest today, Ann Koski, is director of the Wisconsin Historical Museum on Madison's Capitol Square. And I should sort of mention that we're not zeroing in just on war memorabilia today, because actually most of the war memorabilia is located in the
Veterans Museum.
The Veterans Museum.
Yeah, we used to have a collection, and in the 1990s, we decided, well, why would we be double collecting? And so we struck an agreement with the Veterans Museum.
And we'll talk some more about that with our guest Ann Koski here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look today at preserving and storing Wisconsin's history with Ann Koski. Ann directs the Wisconsin Historical Museum. Let me get that title correct. I want to make sure of that. And it's located on Madison's Capitol Square. Having some fun talking with her about those efforts to preserve. Got a new preservation storage facility going up, but she knows a lot about the materials that are housed within her museum. And so we're having some fun talking with her, and certainly you can join in with your questions or comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And, you know, Ann, we've got Bobby in Oshkosh on with a question, so let's go right there to Bobby. Bobby, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to call and ask if there was any information on different musicians from Wisconsin or any recordings at the Historical Museum.
I think I can answer yes to both of those questions. We have an incredible archive of different types of material, especially of people, places, and things. And the best place to start is to go to our website. It's www.wisconsinhistory.org, and Wisconsin is spelled out. And if you go there and click on the section on research, you can see a lot of the different types of material that we have. And you can go into either MADCAT or ARCAT. ARCAT is our archival section that has recordings, and it has manuscripts and oral histories. And then just with a search engine, type in the names of the people you're interested in. You can also go to our visual archives. Again, type in their names, see if we have any images. Remembering, however, that only, a very small percentage is actually online. So it's easy, though, to then email one of the research folks and say, hey, do you have something on XYZ, whether it's a person, a place, or a thing, that isn't up? And they can get back to you and let you know.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, great. That's great information. And, Bob, thank you. John in Germantown, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Having a great day listening to your program, as usual.
Thank you.
Two things. Number one, we have a rich, rich panoramic art heritage as well. I don't know if many people realize it, but the West Bend Art Museum takes a lot of historical questions on the panoramic paintings and a lot of art done. We have a tremendous Germanic heritage there. And I'm wondering if our guest works with that museum in that regard. And then I had another thing I wanted to mention as well after she answers this question.
Tom Lidke is the director of that museum, which is now, they've changed their name to, I think it's a Wisconsin Museum of Art. So they focus primarily on Wisconsin artists. We do work with them, not specifically on panoramic artists, but on Wisconsin art in general. We also have a small collection of art, which actually is all online. But we do work with Tom and his museum on a variety of different things. It's a great museum, by the way.
Oh, it is. And, you know, one of the great German artists, Karl von Marr, was actually born of German parents in Wisconsin.
Yes, and I know that museum has a great collection of his.
Yeah, and then do you do anything with the new Grohmann Museum down at MSOE? I know that he donated over 600 pieces of European art showing work.
No, we haven't. Since we focus primarily on Wisconsin and we're primarily history, normally, you know, we do work with other art museums. A good example right now is that some of our Native American material is on display at the Milwaukee Art Museum. And so we do lend material as well as work on historical aspects of artists. So we work through the Wisconsin Federation of Museums, which is a coalition of all the museums, whether they're art museums, history museums, science museums, children museums, or whatever. So we pretty much all know each other.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, John, for calling. You can join in, too, with your question at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Someone else was wondering about the connection of UW Extension and the museum in this new facility that you're working on.
Well, the new facility, no. UW Extension is not affiliated with this particular project. I believe that one of the things kind of out there is that we are designing this building such that it can be added to.
Ah.
So that other, say, UW Library System or whomever in the future, should they want to be part of the preservation storage facility, it will be very easy to add on another wing.
Oh, that's wonderful. You mentioned this is, and Christmas is a little ways off yet, but you were talking with me about Victorian Christmases and how interesting they were.
They really are. One of the great things about being a museum director is that I get to learn and get to actually study all sorts of neat, you know, weird, cool stuff. And my latest project is Victorian Christmases, and I actually have several programs I'm going to be giving on it. But I think one of the things that just blew my mind is the fact that my vision of Christmas, I thought, you know, was slowly but surely come up through history, and with the Victorians kind of reaching the excess of time. Only I found out that's not really true. Although Victorians kind of invented Christmas as we think of it today, but prior to that, especially in the 1600s and so, Christmas was banned, actually banned. And there were fines and you got thrown in jail, etc. And that's because prior to that, Christmas was a time when mobs of people used to go out and they would go to the homes of the rich and famous, so to speak, stand outside of those homes and actually demand food and money. So the song, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, you know, and how they talk about, now bring us some figgy pudding.
Yeah.
That's a threat. You know, you bring us some food and we won't go until we get it.
Yes.
That all comes from that time, and that's the hidden meaning behind it. So I'm studying all this thing thinking, wow, what did the Victorians do? Well, they turned Christmas on their ears, so to speak, and in part has to do with the growth of the middle class, because people, you know, as the middle class grew and the nation became more industrialized, you have people with money to spend. And Clement Moore's The Visit from St. Nicholas starts it partly, and Queen Victoria popularizes it, and off we went to the races.
That's a great story. Well, Jean in Eau Claire has a question for you or comment. Jean, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Back in the 60s, my father acquired one of those 8mm film cameras. And I know that he's got this box full of old films of us when we were kids. But in there, I remember that he had a couple of films that he had taken while he was in Vietnam. I was wondering what you might suggest, because I know that some of them are broke, and I'm afraid they're becoming really degraded, because I know they degrade after time. What would your suggestion be to try and preserve those?
Well, you're right. Film can be very touchy depending on what it's made out of. My suggestion would be probably to see if we couldn't, for you to call us. And our general number is area code 608-264-6555. And what we can do is get you in touch with an expert, because when it comes to film, you really need to talk to somebody who is a specialist in that. Now, we do preserve film. We have our Wisconsin Center for Film and Theater Research that is a joint project between us and the UW-Madison School. And they have folks that can help you, probably give you some tips. And there are other folks we can send you to. But the best deal is just give us a call, 608-264-6555, and we can direct you to the right source.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And the number for you to call to join in is 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Within your collections, you have some Native American remnants as well.
Yes, we do.
And even remains, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. We do have human remains.
And I expect there's been some touchiness about that particular issue.
Well, interestingly enough, in 1990, the federal government passed what's known, well, what we call NAGPRA, which stands for the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. And because we are a state agency, we do fall under that federal law. And what that federal law says is that there's five categories of material that include human remains and the grave goods that were buried with them that are to be repatriated to the proper tribe, nation, or band. So we have been working very closely with all the different tribes, nations, and bands here in the state of Wisconsin. We have notified all the others, and we sent out over 200 letters of notification to tribes, nations, bands that were federally recognized all over the country, Hawaii and Alaska. And we are working with all the different Native American groups that wish to know what it is that we have. They often ask us for images. We might have to, we actually host different groups who come in and look at our materials. They often do ceremonies with the materials. And then if they determine that they are in fact affiliated, those remains are, say, with their band of Ojibwa or something else, they can make a request to have them returned. So there's actually a legal process that we go through as well as they in order for the return of the material.
But it's, and that's been going, and that's an ongoing thing for you.
That is an ongoing thing. It has been since the 1990s. In the new preservation storage facility, we will have a special room to house those types of material that are known as NAGPRA eligible, because they need to be separated out from the day-to-day material, Native American materials that are not NAGPRA eligible.
Let's go to Ron in Madison next. Ron, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Yes. How secure are your storage facilities, especially the new one being built on Troy Drive? Earlier this year, I attended an event on the other end of State Street that had hundreds or at least dozens of rare books on display. And I asked there about security and getting things out of town. That happened to be near the 40th anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and one atomic bomb would wipe out almost all of our historic collection that's within the city of Madison.
Sure.
Another threat is Lake Mendota. Twice this year, it has exceeded the 100-year regional flood level, and so I'm wondering, your new facility at Troy Drive, how close is it to lake level? I can see on the map that it's less than 2 miles from our regional airport, which would surely be a target if anything like the Cuban Missile Crisis ever gets worse than it did. I would suggest, and you hopefully have already done this, the historical societies that exist around the state that you work with. Hopefully you have arrangements with several of those in municipalities, say less than 5,000 or 10,000 people, to store your multi-million dollar collection in several locations and to have trucks ready to get it out of Madison in case of a severe emergency.
All right. Well, let's talk about what emergency preparedness. What have you done in or what safeguards have you put in place, let's say, to protect your materials?
Well, that's what we call disaster planning. And first you deal with the disasters or plan for the disasters that are most probable. I mean, sure, there's a possibility of an atomic bomb, but the probability, hopefully, is low, yeah. Whereas the probability of a flood in the collections area is much higher. So the disaster planning that we have done has, we feel by necessity, just because of scarce resources, focused in on the most probable sorts of disasters. So that's water, fire, theft, and so forth. And we actually have disaster plans in place to take care of those, including we are members of the, what used to be known as the Upper Midwest Conservation Association.
Mm-hmm.
They have a disaster team that operates 24/7, so that if I have a major disaster with collections, I can call them and they will be there as soon as they can from Minneapolis-St. Paul. So we're very, very lucky that we have that. In citing the institution, I mean, they did look at, floodplain levels. Again, that's the whole idea of flooding.
Yeah.
They looked at, yes, it is within spitting distance, if you want to call it that, with the airport. We understand that. But we just had to take a lot of factors into account.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Ron. Appreciate it. I want to give Evelyn a chance to get on, too. Evelyn in Beaver Dam, it's your turn. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi. I'm just wondering if you have any memorabilia in regard to the Cadet Nurse Corps. It was a very important federal program during the Second World War, and they graduated 124,000 nurses at a time when the nurses were all being, all the graduate nurses were going into the military. And I have uniforms from that era. We had the woolen gray uniforms. It was really a movement during that time, and it freed up. In fact, it was the cadet nurses that almost took care of the entire nursing in the hospital that I worked in.
Well, that's very interesting. I do know that we have Red Cross nurses' uniforms from World War II because we do cover the home front, so to speak. If it was a nurse's uniform that was, say, a Navy nurse or, a nurse from a branch of the armed services, then the Veterans Museum collects that material. But if this was a home front material, so to speak, yes, we are very interested in that. Do we have any? I'm not sure. Because like I said, we have well in excess of 500,000 objects. But it's pretty easy to find out. You just need to give us a call and ask for Leslie Belay. It's B-E-L-L-A-I-S. First name is Leslie. She is our curator of costumes and textiles. And she can get right onto our computerized database that has all the information in about what we actually have for nurses' uniforms, and she can help you out. How do you reach her? Again, go to our main number, 608-264-6555. Ask for Leslie Belay, and we will transfer you to her phone.
Thank you. I guess what's so amazing to me is that nobody's heard of the cadet nurses, and that's all that was in the hospital. And yet nobody has heard of this whole program.
Well, we really like to tell stories, especially, if you will, stories that aren't always out there. So, and the way we tell stories is through objects in our exhibitions and our programs. So please give Leslie a call. I know she'd be very interested.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Again, that number was 608-264-6555. And give that number a call. And also just go the website, too. What's the website again?
It's www.wisconsinhistory.org.
Okay.
Real easy, and it's a great website.
What about some other – we've got some other – so many things we could talk about.
Oh, yes.
Here, archaeological excavations. Talk a little about what we've got from that.
We have over 300,000 objects from archaeological excavations, and we have excavated everything from the very early Paleo-Indian, 10,000, 11,000 years ago, up to the 1850s. In fact, one of our most unusual finds is now on display at the museum in our Odd Wisconsin exhibit. It's the oldest piece of Wisconsin toast. Yep, you heard me correct. It's toast, and we found it in the excavation of a tavern. So we put it on display in Odd, Wisconsin, because we thought that was pretty odd and unusual.
And how old is it?
In the 1850s, so it's over 150 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I love that story. You know, you mentioned privies to me as well, and we've got...
Oh, privies, yes. Actually, the part of my background is in archaeology, and the first archaeological site I ever dug was a privy hole. And archaeologists love privies, otherwise known as outhouses, outhouse holes, because at least before indoor plumbing, privies were also your garbage pit. So you threw great stuff down the privy hole, and so it wasn't just used as a toilet. So you can find some pretty amazing things. And I know I was a part of an excavation for a privy, a double cedar, double hole, up in the Green Bay area a couple years ago. And we found lots and lots of material that indicated that one hole was for women and one hole was for men. So you found ceramics, you know, kitchen ceramics and so forth on one side. And on the other side, you found things like nails and so forth. There was only one thing we found that was could be found in both sides. You have any idea what that would be? Am I stumping you?
Yes.
Liquor bottles.
Liquor bottles. So yes. So men and women.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, what about costume jewelry?
Oh, that's my fun hobby. So I am fortunate that, like I said, I get to do all sorts of things as a museum director. And in my previous life as the director of the Neville Museum up in Green Bay, I started researching and collecting costume jewelry. And I love it the same way I love things Victorian, because it tells a lot about the time period, tells a lot about the growth of the middle class, things people thought were important, symbolism, technology, you know, all these things that you can get out of one little piece of jewelry. And it's pretty.
And it's pretty besides. And let's say a community, let's say, I don't know, any community, Watertown or some town has an interest in a specific area or kind of topic, and they'd like to maybe have an exhibition. Are there ways that you can actually loan out things to, of course, legitimate organization?
All the time. We loan out objects to all over the United States. Paintings, gambling equipment, believe it or not. We have a huge collection of, you know, 1920s, 30s, and 40s gambling materials that were confiscated at those times. Most other museums burnt them or got rid of them during the Prohibition period. We did not. So now if a museum in Kansas, for instance, and this has actually happened, wanted to do an exhibit on that sort of thing, they have to come to us pretty much to get that older, authentic material. So we loan out materials within the state, to Canada, to Europe, to other members of the United States. So we're there.
And it's a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. And, you know, to find out more about what we've been talking about, go to wisconsinhistory.org. That's probably the best way to do it. You'll find out a lot more about the museum and about the new storage facility. And if you've got some specific questions, that's a good place to go, because you can ask those specific questions and maybe get them answered online. Ann, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Ann Koski directs the Wisconsin Historical Museum. Pleasure to have her with us. Tomorrow, Dennis Dimmick, executive editor of National Geographic magazine, will be my guest on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.